This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Health News Digest on the Bigger Picture. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Health News Digest. If you've just joined us, I'm Tina Camellia alongside Tisho Ik, and here's a word from our Prime Minister.
Well, one of the things is that we find some people drinking these bottled drinks. One day, 6 or 7 bottles of bottled drink. It's not necessary. You can drink water. So if you drink bottled drink, there's a lot of sugar in it. We want to reduce the consumption of sugar, because we go everywhere in the hospital. You find people coming in for some disease, but when we check, they all have diabetes. Diabetes rate is very high in Malaysia because we take too much sugar.
And we take too much sugar, and because of that, the Prime Minister says the government is considering implementing a soda tax to reduce sugar consumption. So we're looking at how effective will this really be in reducing diabetes rates. A primer first, soda tax, or in some countries it's a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. These fall under taxes that are directed at unhealthy products. So we've had, you know, sin taxes like alcohol, tobacco. And historically, the primary objective of these kinds of taxes has been to generate revenues for the government coffers. And public health authorities are now looking at using such taxes to raise the cost of these unhealthy products with the aim of reducing their consumption among the population. And in some cases, then they also use the revenue, they earmark it for specific health-related spending. So as Tun M alluded to, and it's the case in many other countries as well, a soda or a sugar tax is primarily aimed at reducing diabetes and obesity and consequently other non-communicable diseases, which is a serious problem in Malaysia. So let's hear from Datuk Dr. Anwar Mohamad Zaini, who is a consultant endocrinologist with the National Diabetes Institute, NADI, about the prevalence of diabetes.
I think at the moment, if you look at the prevalence at the moment that we are done by the academic institution and the Ministry of Health, that our data was very well beyond 18.6%. In the 30 years before, in 1986, we were just 6.3%. If you look at that, at three times escalation in about 30 years. The escalation is phenomenal, and we're one of the countries in Asia Pacific region. We're going to have a lot of diabetes in the next in 2025, 2045, and I think if we do not do anything to curb this, we're going to be having very high costs of healthcare, because diabetes permeates into all other conditions. You know, another condition means heart disease, stroke, amputation, kidney disease, and so on. Diabetes is part and parcel of all this. What is recorded in the statistics is just diabetes alone, but actually, diabetes causes all the other complications. You know.
Yeah, I think wasn't it just in July or something when NADI, the
National Diabetes Institute,
said that Malaysia has the highest diabetes rate in Asia.
In Asia.
Perhaps only Saudi Arabia had a higher rate than us.
Yes, very, very close to Saudi Arabia. And we rank number 12 in the world, apparently.
I see. So does it work, though?
A sugar tax? So we got a couple of experts to weigh in with their votes. One of them is Dr. Winnie Chi, president of the Malaysian Dietitians Association.
So basically, in countries which have already implemented sugar taxes, they have shown that the consumption of sugary beverages have gone down. But however, there is still no data yet to show that the obesity rate has gone down.
And also, Datuk Dr. Anwar again with his input.
At the moment, I don't think there is any purely random studies to look at the association between the cost of sugars and the prevalence or incidence of diabetes.
So we've heard from them, Dr. Winnie and Dr. Anwar, that the effect of a sugar tax on actually reducing the prevalence of these diseases is limited. We just don't have enough evidence now. If we look at other countries that have imposed a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages, such as Mexico, Chile, UK just a few months ago this year, let's look at what kind of impact they have observed. In Chile, there are signs that consumption declined, particularly among high socioeconomic groups, 21.6% decrease per month of their consumption, but compared to 12% reduction in the low socioeconomic group. So it shows that the tax does not reduce socioeconomic inequalities in diet-related health. And looking at Mexico, which imposed the tax in 2014, if I'm not mistaken, they did an analysis 2 years after the tax was introduced, found a 5.5% drop of consumption in the first year, followed by a 9.7% drop in the second. Now, when I came across this next study, it sounded really exciting. It estimated that Mexico's tax would prevent nearly 190,000 new cases of diabetes over 10 years at an average savings of $983 million in related healthcare costs.
Sounds exciting, but is it really?
Well, obviously, they haven't been able to get these actual numbers. So these are based on modeling studies. They are projections. They say that the projections look optimistic, but we shouldn't take them as actual real-time decline in incidence. Again, we turn to our experts to help us understand what are the limitations with the tax.
Reviewing the market price of sugar, to me, it makes very little impact because you are not going to increase the sugar price to three, four, or fourfold because that will be affecting your economy and then also affecting the other aspects of the market dynamics. You see, but I think what we need to do now is actually to explain why sugar, which is equivalent to glucose, which is 100 grams of sugar. Or 100 grams of glucose has a lot of calories in it, more than 300 over calories, and you need to exercise more than half an hour a day to burn that amount of and our sugars in every aspect of our food.
Indeed.
He's right. Malaysian diet is we like our things like super manis. And so why has sugar gained this bad rap? They're actually a type of carbohydrate. They're the smallest and simplest type of carbohydrate. They break down into simple forms like fructose, galactose, and glucose, which are then digested by the body and used as our primary source of energy. So sugar itself, each gram of sugar provides 4 calories. And for some context, 1 teaspoon of sugar that you put into your drink is equivalent to 4 grams. Now, sugar, on the one hand, is naturally present in many of the foods that we eat, such as dairy products, your milk has lactose, fruits, of course, contain fructose, and even some sweet vegetables like sweet potato and carrots and tomatoes contain some form of sugar as well. But the one that we are most concerned about is table sugar, sucrose, which is the one that we use as added sugar. We just put it into our drinks and cakes and desserts and all that. So when you take too much of this free sugar or added sugar, it increases your overall energy intake. Obviously, you're taking in a lot of calories. And it would probably reduce your intake of other foods that are actually that contain more nutritionally adequate calories. So if you're drinking a lot of soda or juices with added sugar, then perhaps you're not drinking enough as much milk, which while containing sugar also has other things like protein and vitamins and minerals. So I looked up the Malaysian recommended nutrient intake document, which recommends that our intake of free sugar should be only 10% of our total daily energy intake or less. Now, to know what our daily energy intake should be is a bit complicated. It really depends on your age, your sex, and your level of activity or whether you're pregnant or lactating. So just to give some example of a range, a 20 to 60-year-old adult male needs between 1,900 and 2,800 calories per day. The same age, a woman would need 1,600 to 2,300 calories a day. So let's just go for the lowest range of the adult male. If he only needs 1,900 calories a day, that means his intake of added sugars per day is only 190 calories, which is 47.5 grams.
Or 12 teaspoons.
12 teaspoons.
That's still a lot of sugar, isn't it?
That's a lot of sugar. Which I think if you start really observing how much sugar you add into your food or in drinks, probably we reach that limit very fast. Because it's not just the one that you're adding yourself into your coffee and tea. It's also a lot of other foods that you buy, especially prepackaged foods where they would have added sugar in. And if you don't read the labels and know how much sugar you're taking, it will probably add up very fast.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search, and a can of Coke almost gets you to your recommended intake at 39 grams. So you only have about 6 grams left for your day.
If, like our Prime Minister says, people are drinking 6 to 7 cans of these sodas
every day. We're taking 6 times more free sugars than we should be.
And remember, when they talk about added sugar, it's also those sweetened beverages, which includes fruit juices, malted drinks, which has been controversial lately. So it's things like that that you want to be really careful to know how much sugar is in all those as well.
Yeah, even as you were mentioning earlier, milk has its own natural sugar, but there are also flavored milk that where you have like a strawberry flavored, chocolate flavored, where you also have added sugars in it. So it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. But as a note of caution, Dr. Winnie Chi also said that, you know, your overall calorie intake and your nutritional well-being is not just about sugar intake alone.
Essentially, obesity is the underlying cause of diabetes and heart disease that and the non-communicable diseases that we currently see. So what is also may be happening is that at the end of the day, even if you cut down sugary foods, it's very important that you still know how to select other foods which are also healthy, and also you're doing your exercises. So it's all about energy balance. So if the people are cutting down on sugary drinks, but they may be selecting other form of drinks which may still be high in calorie, then we may not see a reduction of our ultimate outcome, which is to reduce the obesity rate, and henceforth we can reduce non-communicable diseases.
Yeah, so we can't use a measure like a tax to be sort of like a band-aid solution, you know, that there are a lot of other things that we have to consider as well.
I know we didn't have a stand on the euthanasia and physician assisted suicide. So where do we stand on this sugar or soda tax?
You're forcing me to
have a stand, yes.
I'm not against imposing a tax as one of many public health measures, but I feel that in itself, it's a regressive move. At the end of the day, people need to embrace behavior change on their own. Punitive measures or measures that sort of like impose this, where we police people's behavior, doesn't create long-term change.
Indeed, I'm not a fan of having a nanny state type of administration. And I think we've discussed this also off-air before, Shaoik, that, you know, if you look at, for example, tobacco advertising, how we ban tobacco advertising, how we make cigarette packaging so gruesome and ugly, and still I don't see that there's a huge decline in the number of smokers in the country. We still have a huge smoking problem.
Mm-hmm. And I have never heard of anyone who looked at a cigarette pack with a oral cancer and said, "Oh, that's terrible, I'm going to quit smoking."
Exactly. Right? It's so much of a internal motivation, right? You have to want to quit your bad habits.
And what makes people quit? I mean, we also discussed this.
Yeah.
It's when someone starts a family. They are expecting a baby. And then that triggers the real change and is more likely to be a sustainable and meaningful change.
Exactly.
So should we turn into nanny state or should we treat people like adults? We ask our experts again.
So it's very important, therefore, to still educate the public about healthier choices and how to balance your energy intake with your energy expenditure. Changing the food environment is also important. So therefore, we should ensure that besides the education part, we could also look into being able to provide healthier food choices in all our eateries and labelling all the calorie content, for example, so that people are at least aware of how much they are taking in to ultimately bring about a change in the health of the people.
And of course, Dato' Anwar also weighs in with some long-term measures to address non-communicable diseases in the country.
I think at the moment, we are not looking at multi-sectoral approach. In the past, we've seen that Minister of Health alone have been banging the door, say, come on, educate, educate, educate. Mm-hmm. But I think that just Minister of Health alone will not be able to be effective. I think all sectors of the community, the industry, even the developers, must come into play. The urban development, rural development, sports, and all must come in. There must be intersectoral involvement in this. We did a discussion between ourselves, the Minister of Health colleagues and the academic colleagues in Malaysia. We had our joint discussion with our British colleagues, British Medical and Health Sciences. We look at all the aspects of obesity and diabetes. And I think we have got some recommendation, and I hope this recommendation will go right to the government. I think we should be taken by the Minister of Health, Minister of Education, Minister of Sports, Minister of Science, and all those things must come together and now look at it in a more concerted manner.
Certainly. I think NCDs are such a huge burden mm-hmm. to our public health system.
Yes.
And a sugar or soda tax alone is not the solution. Yeah. It has to be so much more.
It's like trying to use a water gun to fight a war, something like that, you know?
That's right. Anyway, here are some stories that we are also keeping tabs on this week.
The Health Ministry is increasing enforcement of aesthetics and cosmetics therapy services to curb illegal beauty services, said Health Minister Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad.
And scientists from the Allen Institute have uncovered a new type of human brain cell that has never been seen in mice and other well-studied laboratory animals. The rosehip neurons may be involved in fine level control between regions of the human brain.
And chronic exposure to air pollution could be linked to cognitive performance, suggests a new US-China study.
Researchers at the University of Minnesota have fully 3D printed an image sensing array on a hemisphere, a first of its kind prototype for a bionic eye. This discovery marks a significant step towards creating a bionic eye that could someday help blind people see or sighted people see better.
Back home, hand, foot and mouth disease cases registered a sharp increase by 122% to 55,860 between January 1st and August 27 this year, compared with the 25,070 cases in the corresponding period last year. Almost 89% of reported cases involved children under 7 years old.
And tomorrow, as BFM celebrates its 10th anniversary, we will have a special health and living show with our doctor in the house, Dr. George Lee, as he reminisces the evolution of his weekly segment over the last decade. Mm. So if there are any major updates on these stories, we'll be sure to cover them in the coming days. Coming up, your common concerns. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.